Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And today's show is going to be about evolution. And not any old evolution, but spontaneous evolution. And that might scare some of us. We live in a very spontaneous world at this point that has surprises for us every day. And to help us talk about spontaneous evolution is one of the co-authors of the book Spontaneous Evolution, Bruce Lipton. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. I so appreciate this opportunity to share some of that exciting information about spontaneous evolution.
Well, you know, it's interesting reading your book because you have such an understanding of community, of the inner community of life, and how that might project into the outer community of life.
Absolutely. Very exciting, and it's, you know, scientific based, so it's not just like New Age woo-woo, you know, so it makes it more exciting.
Well, it is. It's wonderful to read this book because it's covered by two of you, actually. You're a co-author with Steve Behrman, and he has been on the show talking about the book. And he brings his political science side to it, and you bring the biological science to it. And the two of you together come up with some very, very valuable insights. And I really enjoyed going through it. So much of it is so rich in knowledge and, of course, science, that of how life actually can work if we let it.
Well, yeah, if we get out of the way, and it looks like we're not doing such a good job with it, and nature is trying to get us out of the way at the moment as well. So we have to wake up and listen to the call that either we learn to change the way we live on this planet, or we can kiss ourselves goodbye from the planet. That's what nature is telling us right now.
And it takes strong voices, in part, to do that. And certainly you're somebody who is getting around a lot, and people are listening to you.
Well, it's been fun because my research took a strange twist back in the 60s, and I was cloning stem cells. It's interesting, a lot of people think stem cells are relatively new in our science experience, but I was actually cloning stem cells in 1967, and these very valuable cells taught me so much and taught me such a different understanding of life that I actually walked out of my tenured position on the medical faculty at the University of Wisconsin. So, because I saw that at that time we were teaching incorrect information to students. But when I first was getting out and starting to speak about this, everybody thought, okay, that's a crazy man. And now I love it because I give the same talk, and scientists that if they hear the talk, they say, what are you saying that's new? So we've come from crazy man to old hat man, but the relevance about that is the science that I was talking about in 1960s, late 60s, is now the leading edge of the new science that is changing the world, because previous to this new science, which is called epigenetics, we dealt with a concept called genetic control, which literally means control by genes. And this is what we taught medical students. This is what the public has learned. I mean, anytime you pick up a school book or you read an article about genes, they always talk about genes controlling this and genes controlling that. And that's the belief system we were programmed with. And you have to understand, what is that, you know, on a big picture level, what does that mean for us? And then I go, well, first of all, as far as we know, we didn't pick the genes that we have. That if we don't like our traits, we just can't go change the genes. And these genes apparently control us. So basically what that science, the genetic control science, was saying very simply was that we are victims of heredity, meaning if you happen to find yourself in a family where cancer is running in the family, or diabetes or Alzheimer's, then you are looking at a clock that's ticking down on your own life where these things will manifest. And you can't do anything about it. And then you have to buy a rescuer. You have to pay somebody to come and fix your system. And that victimization is so disempowering. The new science comes to a very important point, and as simple as this: a gene is a blueprint. That's exactly what it is. It is a linear molecule that tells how to make the proteins, and the proteins are the building blocks of your body. So when you look in the mirror and see your physical expression, you're really looking at the organization of proteins. And I say, yeah, and the DNA is the blueprint for these proteins. And then everybody says, yeah, that's why they control your traits. I go, no, wait a minute. Blueprints don't control anything. Let's take this example. You go into an architect's office, and she's working on a blueprint, and you ask the architect, you say, excuse me, is your blueprint on or off? And of course, she'd look at you like, what are you crazy? I mean, there's no on and off to a blueprint. And I go, precisely. Mm-hmm. Genes have no on and off. Genes are blueprints. They don't control themselves. They don't have a decision-making capacity in your life. They are just strictly physical blueprints. And I say, well, why is that important? Because, well, if genes don't control their own reading, they don't control which genes are being activated, then you have to say what does.
Well, let me just say, though, that when we look at genes, they are extremely intelligent.
Well, what does that mean, Peter, when you say that?
It means that they know how to follow their blueprint.
No, they are the blueprint.
Right, exactly.
when you say that they follow their blueprint, then what you're saying is there's some awareness to the gene that it knows what it's supposed to be
well,
doing.
Well, it's not making choices.
No, it's just it's simply you go into, you know, if women are out there, it's easier because they have fabric shops where they have and you want to make something like a dress or a sweater, pants or whatever it is. You go into the store, and there's a clerk at the counter, and you say, "Look, I want to make a pair of pants." And they say, oh, okay, what kind of pants do you like? And then you say, this kind of, and then they go to a drawer, and they pull out a little bit of a pattern how to make this, okay? Well, the point about that, this is exactly the same as the genes. And the point is, the genes are the pattern in the package. The pattern itself controls nothing. It has no awareness it was taken out of the drawer. It has no idea what it's used for. It's just a pattern. And,
right.
And when I say that about genes, then it also holds exactly the same. But here's the difference. When you have a pattern, you as the let's say contractor who picks the pattern, you can say, well, look, I want to change the pattern a little bit here, and I want to change it to do this here and that. And this is what we found out, that not only are the genes blueprints, but the contractor, that turns out to be your mind, can not only select which genes are going to be activated, but the mind can cause a change in the blueprint. Listen to this number, because this is like mind-boggling. You can create 30,000 variations of proteins from the same gene blueprint, depending on how you perceive the world around you. In other words, the blueprints you might think are fixed, but no, they're not. You can create 30,000 variations of every gene in your body based on how you respond to life.
Well, I like the metaphor that you created about pants.
About what?
About tailoring pants. And what I like about that is that, let's say there is a pattern.
Yes.
And there are also designers and there are tailors, and you go to the tailor and you say, make that blue instead of pink.
Yes.
And make that shorter instead of longer.
Exactly.
Or whatever. So that's great. And yet in society, there are a lot of people who can't think for themselves. And they go to the tailor.
That's a problem because, as you just said, you tell the designer what you want, okay? And then so you say, okay, so there's a blueprint called a gene. There's a designer. And then you tell the designer, well, that's actually how it works. In other words, your mind creates an image, and your brain will release the chemistry, which is like the mechanical interface between what you see and the reading of the genes. And the chemistry released by the brain can modify the blueprint. So basically said, yeah, okay, there's a structure, there's a process where you change the blueprint, but you still go back one step before that and say, yeah, but whose idea or design is what's being translated, and that's where it comes into the mind. Well, then you say, well, wait, if my mind says I can do this, then my mind will manifest the response. But if my mind says at the same, you know, it could say, no, I can't do that, well, then it won't activate the response.
Exactly.
And why that's relevant is the activation or inactivation, we've always said the genes did that, but now it turns out it's our mind and our perception, and that's where the belief comes in, and that's when you give up belief over your power, and you say somebody else's belief has more power than mine. So I say, oh, there's a professional, he's called the doctor. And when the doctor says that's true, well, why is that relevant? Because the belief system in your body buys whatever truth you want to say is the true one. If you say the doctor's right, then the doctor's right. If the doctor says you have terminal cancer and you say, yes, the doctor's right, and you fully believe it, you will manifest terminal cancer even if you didn't have cancer.
And doctors like to do that all the time.
Well, it's unfortunately, when you say they like to do it, it's actually a stupid, like, in-house rule that bites its own ass sometimes.
Exactly.
The rule is basically says, do not offer false hope.
Exactly.
And but then what they have, in not offering so-called, you know, quote, false hope, unquote, they offer no hope. And so it's like, well, that's worse than anything, because if I'm buying your belief system as being true, and I buy it because you're the professional, and that's what I learned in my developmental period, that when it comes to a professional, you take their word or their truth over your own truth. So when I give up hope because the doctor says, no, there's nothing you can do, go home, take care of your stuff, then I have, by choice, deferred to somebody else's truth and accepted that, and I will die just because I bought that truth. And in fact, the ones that survive all this stuff are the ones that say, I'm not buying that story. I'm not going to believe that. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to do different. Those people who are committed to have a different resolution end up having a different consequence of their illness. So,
well, that can go in so many different directions, and we can be influenced in even false directions.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's very interesting because let's go to a simple fact. And when we talk about the healing industry, the medical industry, it's been estimated up to two-thirds of all medical healing. It's two-thirds of all medical healing is related to something called the placebo effect. That is, the belief system of the patient is actually controlling the healing. So the doctor says, here's a pill, the newest drug that's going to fix you. It's brand new. It just came out of the laboratory. This drug is going to heal you. You believe that. If you actually believe that and you have this illness and then you take this drug, the illness will go away because you say, oh, wow, the drug healed me. And then you find out later, yeah, but it was just a sugar pill. And this is the basis of the placebo effect. It's your belief as a patient that this pill or this process or this surgery is what it takes to heal me. You believe that. You go through the process, and then you're healed. And then you say, oh, it was the process. But then the placebo story shows out that, yeah, but if that process included a sugar pill or a fake operation, you still get healed. So basically, it wasn't the pill. It wasn't the operation. It was basically your belief system. So everybody goes, yeah, okay, I got that story. I can see how my mind influences my healing because of what I believe. And I go, good, now you got half the story.
Right.
Because what you're talking about in the placebo effect is how positive thinking about this procedure is going to lead to a healing. I go, that's really great. And I say, but what about a negative belief? What about a belief that, no, I can't heal this. No, this will never happen, or this will not work. And why is this important? Because the negative belief is as equally powerful in controlling your life as the positive belief, but it goes in the opposite direction. There's, in fact, a name for it. It's called the nocebo effect instead of the placebo effect. And you say, well, what does that mean? It's like, well, it's the power of your belief, whether it's positive belief or negative belief, is equally effective in influencing your health, but in opposite directions. A negative belief can make you sick. It can even cause you to die. If you totally are in belief that you're going to die, and that's your committed belief in your mind, you can actually die with actually no illness or disease. But that's the belief, and that's why we have to let go of the genetic control by genes, and hold on to this brand new science, which I saw 40 years ago, which is now becoming mainstream, leading edge science. It's called epigenetic control. You say, well, genetic control is controlled by genes. What's epigenetics? I go, that little tiny prefix, epi, changes the world, changes the whole civilization.
Right, and then what you have then is that consciousness actually controls everything. So even if you're sick to begin with, that might easily have come from consciousness.
Not most easily. It actually, we now recognize that the belief system is the overriding power and control of our health. It's overriding, so that for sure, negative beliefs can lead to death, and positive beliefs can actually create miraculous healing. So we start to let go of the miracle word. Throw the miracle word out, because miracle says, I don't understand how it works, but boy, it was amazing. This person just changed their belief system, and then they got well. Today, that miracle disappears, because we know how the brain translates a perception into chemical responses, and the chemicals then go into the blood, and the blood is like the culture medium for the mm-hmm. cells in our body. So the composition of the blood controls the genetic readout and the fate of your cells, and it's based on your perception. So like when you open your eyes and if you see someone you love, the brain will release these kind of chemicals called like serotonin, dopamine, endorphins, growth hormone. This chemistry from the brain, when released, is associated with a perception of love. But what does it do? It enhances the health of the body. That's why when people fall in love, you look at them and they're, my God, they're beaming, they're bright, they're healthy, they're excited, they're full of spirit. It's like, how'd you get all this energy and health from? And the answer was, you released a set of chemicals that promote all that. And then I say, okay, but if I open my eyes and I see something that scares me, I go, oh, you release different chemicals in the brain. Now you release stress hormones, corticotropic steroids. You're releasing inflammatory elements and histamine. Well, these chemicals have a very different effect on your cells. They change the genetic readout, get you ready for fight or flight and protection. They shut down the growth mechanisms to conserve energy to run away from that saber-toothed tiger. Well, the point about it is what? The fate of my cells wasn't just independent action by themselves, by their genes. The fate of my cells was directly conforming to the chemistry released by my brain, and the chemistry released by my brain is directly connected to my perceptions of love or growth or protection or fear. What we see in the world is converted into brain chemistry, which controls the cells. So let's change your mind.
But let's look, exactly, let's look at that. And we're talking about spontaneous evolution.
Yes.
So we're talking about evolution. We're talking about moving forward. And right now, and the book is very clear about how stuck we all are.
Well, we're on the edge of going extinct, and that's a scientific fact. So stuck is it doesn't really fully say that, hey, we're disappearing now.
Right.
And we have to, and science has recognized, and this is a fact that we must own, science says that the extinction that we are facing is caused by human behavior. That's
so,
a fact.
So you have shown how responsible we are.
Or irresponsible.
Well, but how responsible we need to be for our future.
Absolutely. It's not a... evolution is not a passive event, you know, like, okay, I'll just sit around the living room and have a beer and evolution will occur while I'm inside and then I'll go outside and there'll be a brand new world. And it goes, no. We are active participants in the process of evolution, because the evolution that we're facing is not the evolution of the human body. That happened 100,000 plus more years ago. That evolution is complete. The body is the body. It's not going to evolve really in any different way. What's evolving is the organization of humans, the community of humans, that we are beginning to recognize that. Let's go back to a
Well,
divorce.
Is it evolving or devolving?
Well, it's in the process of devolving because it needs to evolve, and yet you say, well, why should it devolve? And the thing is this, if we live the way we are living and believe the things that we believe as we do right now, this is actually what's causing our extinction. So it says, well, what do you need to do? And the first thing is you have to change the way we're thinking. You have to change the way we're living, because this is responsible for the extinction. So it says, well, then you have to take the structures that are creating the way of life, which is politics, economy, academia, healthcare, current religion. These structures are the ones that have been teaching us this is how we live on this planet. And now when we follow all these instructions, we find out that we're undermining the Garden of Eden, we're undermining the biosphere, we're now facing extinction. And there's a simple principle. It says, and it's Einstein. I just love Einstein's phrase. It says, you cannot solve the problems with the same thinking that created the problems. So basically it says, oh, then all the institutions, government, economy, academia, et cetera, these are the ones that have created the thinking that we're living by. And it's like, yeah, these institutions have to crash. And so when you look at the world right now, it looks like it's devolving. The structures are falling apart. I'm going, if the structures don't fall apart, then we sure as heck are on a direct course to extinction.
That's great.
So, and that's why people are living in fear, like, oh my God, this system is crashing and crumbling, and oh my God, I'm afraid. And I'm going, no, don't be afraid. I would be totally afraid if it didn't crash.
This is Armageddon.
Because if it doesn't crash, the science has already told you what the conclusion is. So it basically says we must change. And the concept of spontaneous is very critical in here, because our belief system, which is incorrect, is that evolution was this very slow process. Imperceptible changes over millions and millions and millions of years have led to all the different species. And it turns out the new understanding of the history of evolution said that's not absolutely true. That's, in fact, that's totally wrong. That evolution goes along like a process of steady, you know, slow increases, and then there's something called a punctuation. Something happens, a crisis of some kind, that then wipes out life almost essentially, more than 70% of life. These are called mass extinctions. They happen five times in history where life was going along, evolving, and all of a sudden some upheaval, comets or asteroids hit the planet, or we went into an ice age, or there was an oxygen catastrophe at one time where there was way too much oxygen and the environment just caught fire. These kind of things happened in the past five times, and in each case life essentially got wiped out and then started all over again. But what was interesting, it didn't take millions and millions of years for all the new species to come. They almost came virtually on the tail of these extinction crises. So it said that evolution is not a continuous process. It's a process where it goes and then hits a punctuation crisis mark, flips upside down. I actually call it the etch-a-sketch evolution. And that is, you know, that toy where you play, you turn the dials and you create an image on the screen. And then at some point you pick up the etch-a-sketch, you shake it all over the place, and the image disappears, and then you start all over again. Well, that's the nature of the evolution. And so what it really reveals is, no, evolution was not a slow, gradual process. It occurred in jumps. Punctuation marks, crises followed by a big jump. Well, we are in the sixth mass extinction. The crisis that we're facing is the environment is no longer sustainable. Not for us. It's actually, the Earth will still be here. It's humans that will be lost right. from that.
Actually, there have been a number of futurists, people who have visions of the future, or they might be in like Brian Weiss has put people in hypnotic states that have actually, instead of regression, he actually did progression.
Yes.
And there are people, in general, when people can see glimpses of the future, they see this planet a lot less populated.
Well, that will happen because it's not sustainable, except for there's a very interesting reality is that with technology, we can easily support everybody on this planet right now. There's not a problem for doing that. It's that we're not using the technology appropriately. Our technology is controlled by corporate enterprises, and corporations are tantamount to dinosaurs. They're reptilian. They eat their own young. I always like that. It's like sort of like Enron. Not only is a corporation that ripped off everybody else's money, it even ripped off the money of its own employees, and that is like a really reptilian trait. And the characteristic about that is that we're moving out of that zone, but the corporations, the dinosaurs, have to die out. Well, yeah, when the economy starts to crash, those big corporations, which, you know, are depending on pushing all this money around, when the money has no value, the corporations have no value, and then we begin something new. And that's why you can look at the stock market and the value of money today and compare it to the price of gold, actually, and you can see that gold is prices of gold are going up every day. And you say, well, what does that mean? It's like gold is getting more expensive. And I say, no, you see, here's the mistake. Gold is always the standard. The money is compared to the standard. So when we pay more money for gold, that means our money is worth less than it was before. So, well, people say, oh, the gold price is going up. It's like, no, actually, in truth, the value of the money is going down. And we are, the United States is slipping in a third world status, right now.
I think what the future is not based on the wealth of money as so much as the wealth of ideas. And I do think that there's so much new technology coming into play that in the old days, there was a lot of new technology that would be squashed by corporations and
yes.
the government.
Yes.
Nowadays, there's so much happening so fast, and it's being released. You know, the government is not controlling it the way they used to.
It's slipping through their hands.
Well, making choices, too. I have a new company, and we're actually going to be building electric power plants using fusion energy.
This is what the whole idea of the future is, and this is why it's so interesting, because especially for young people, and I say young people because I'm an old guy, right? And I say young people like alphabet generations, X generation, Y, Z. These are the three or four generations that have occurred in the last 20, 30, 40 years.
We're the O generation.
The O.
Old.
Well, so the significance about that is that they play one of the most important roles in the evolution of this planet. And yet, it's funny because when you talk to these alphabet generation people, they're the ones that are thinking, oh, my God, I got this tremendous college debt. I went to school, got a degree. I can't get a job. I can't get involved in a system. I can't get a house. I can't buy into the world. And so we have this massive number of young people who find themselves outside of the structure. And it's like, for me, this is like, okay, listen, this is very important, young people, for this reason. The evolution that is required is that we change the institutions. That means we change the structure. Well, here's the point. If everybody is holding on to the structure for dear life because that's what it, you know, that's their
right,
future.
Right, if they're already inside it.
If they're outside of it, in fact, that's where the problem is. We have now more than 50% of the population that's not part of the structure. And that is bringing us to a tipping point for this reason. When we get more people that are not in the structure than are in the structure, that's when the structure is allowed to crash because there are fewer people holding on to it.
Yeah.
We are at that point. And yet, what does it mean when the young people allow it to crash? Well, all of a sudden, there's no structure for a moment, and then all the new ideas,
right,
all the new visions, all the new technology,
right,
that has been sitting in the wings for a while will all of a sudden start to manifest, and we will create a whole new civilization. So I get very excited about it because, some people are living in total fear, like, oh, my God, the world is falling apart, the corporations are crashing, blah, blah, blah. And I go, cool. If they don't, we're in deep trouble. But if they do, that means we build something new. And it's on the shoulders of these young people. So it's funny, today they're saying, oh, my God, I can't be in the structure, and I'm trying so hard, and I've got so much debt. And then I say, and tomorrow you own the structure. And that's what they have to recognize, is that they're not owning the structure right now is most important step for allowing the structure to fall apart so we can build something more sustainable.
Right. And that's a beautiful realization. And that's why your book is called Spontaneous Evolution, because it's that spontaneity that will come from these people who are kind of standing there going, what's next? Because they haven't lost anything because they weren't in it.
Right. But then everybody has nothing, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, now we start on a new playing field, and we start all over again.
Right.
And
they're not trying to hold on to the past because they weren't in it anyway.
No, and it's fun because I travel around the world a lot, give lectures. You know what I find is most exciting is I find young people, and that to me is people under 40 at this point, and I find that young people all over the world are almost, you know, they have the same ideas and the same desires. That they have this international air about them. They're not, oh, I'm an American and you're a German. It's like, no, we are people.
Right.
And the boundaries disappear, the borders disappear that have been held up by the older generations, the borders that they used to say that my side against your side.
And, well, the tribal nature will turn more into a collective nature.
And it has to, because that's what the evolution, as I said, it's not the evolution of the human body, it's the evolution of, in biology, we call it a superorganism, and a superorganism is actually comprised of a whole lot of organisms banding together to create a new thing, and basically a superorganism, and what I'm talking about is called humanity. Humanity is a living organism where each human, you, me, everyone on this radio right now, every one of us is a cell in the body of one organism called humanity. Right now, it's fractured into different tribes, nations, states, whatever you want to say, and they're warring against each other. So, you know, if you said to me, well, Bruce, how's the health of that new super organism, humanity? And I would say, geez, unfortunately, right now, it's suffering from a bad case of autoimmune disease, which means self-destruction.
But
we're killing each other. The cells of the same organism are killing each other. And what the new evolution is, no, there'll be a moment where we recognize we are all one. We are all part of one thing, and that this human life on this side of the planet is equally important and valuable as the human life on the other side of the planet. And when we really come to that, we are ready to experience,
to evolve
the new evolution. Yeah,
right.
So it's an evolution in consciousness, not an evolution in biology, physiology.
Right. And Bruce Lipton, thank you. This has been so great, and you're doing a hero's job of running around the world explaining this to people so that we can all take ownership of it.
Well, it's great because it's, you know, I love my lecture because what do? I go out and tell people they're powerful. After, you know, millennia of you are a victim, you're frail, you're vulnerable, you have no power or control, and here comes a new science that says you are the master. It's a great lecture, and it's a great thing to own because when we do that, we can change the planet.
This is great. Bruce Lipton, the author, co-author of Spontaneous Evolution. How can people connect? Do you have a website?
Yeah, absolutely. Very simple. BruceLipton.com. And it's great because there's a lot of free articles about things that we're talking about. You can download and catch up on them. What is this new evolution all about? Because, as I said, we are all participants in this evolution. It's not a passive event, that we all need to be proactive and change ourselves so that the world will change as well.
And thank you for all your proactivism.
Thank you for this great opportunity to talk to your wonderful audience, Peter.
Thank you so much, Bruce. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.